We'll open the subcommittee of the subcommittee. This is the subcommittee of general, joint subcommittee of Ways and Means General Government. Today we are opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 5524 for the Oregon State Library. We acknowledge Katie Cannon from Legislative Fiscal Office and Jamie Penn as our clerk today. The Oregon State Library is of significant value to the entire state, and we appreciate your attendance here today. We'll go ahead and turn time to Legislative Fiscal Officer, Representative Katie Cannon, please. I know you don't want to say Legislative Fiscal Officer because you're an officer, but not the officer.
No, okay. The officer. So I'll be very brief on this. But, the bill, Senate Bill 5524, is what we're going to be hearing today. The Oregon State Library has what I found to be a very clear mission and very focused in their mission. Basically, there's three things. They provide quality information services to the Oregon State government. They provide reading materials to blind and print-disabled Oregonians, and they provide leadership grants and other assistance to improve local library services to all Oregonians. There are four sections in this particular agency: administration, library development, talking book and braille service, library information services. Now, their recommended budget is $11,160,756, which is a 5% increase over the legislative approved budget, 1997-99. In your packet, you have the legislative fiscal analysis, and you also have a special review by the Secretary of State's office. And this particular review looks at internal controls primarily, and the agency can, you know, discuss that further. During the interim, the library did present to the September 1997 e-board a reclassification of the grants coordinator position to a library 4. There were no budget notes from the 1997 legislative session, nor were there any interim studies conducted during the biennium other than the special review. And that's fair. I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you very much, Katie. Ms. Kroll? And Mr. Shipley, if you'd like to come forward, usually I have Representative Croft go ahead and lay the ground rules on acronyms because of the, I see your stack of quarters there, because of the term limits and the newness of many of us in government. We like to avoid acronyms as much as possible, plus the fact that in a few years from now, people will be listening to these tapes, perhaps, trying to figure out what we were trying to do here, and when they're filled with acronyms, maybe we won't know which direction we were going. So even though we may know who some of those folks are today, we may not know. Now, this is for the ACS, that's American Cancer Society, and that's their 25 cents. First two acronyms are free if you'll tell us what they are, and after that, 25 cents. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Debbie Kroll, and I am the chairman of the Oregon State Library Board of Trustees. As you know, we are a group of seven people chosen by the governor to represent the people for library services here in the state of Oregon. We have taken on this charge, and we feel very strongly about it, and we feel that we have done a very cost-effective job here for the people in the state of Oregon. I would like at this time to turn the presentation over to Jim Shepke, who is our state librarian.
Thank you, Ms. Cole.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Shepke. I'm state librarian, director of the Oregon State Library, and I have a presentation that I've prepared for you, and you have copies at your place, so you can look at the copies or watch the screen. And what I want to do first, Mr. Chair, is give just a brief overview of the State Library program in accordance with your outline. So that won't take very long, and then we'll turn it over to Dave Fazier. as Katie mentioned, the mission of the State Library is very clear and concise. We really just do three things. We provide information services to Oregon state government. We provide reading materials to blind and print-disabled Oregonians. And we provide leadership grants and other assistance to improve local library service for all Oregonians. We've had that mission since about 1991 when the board worked hard to really focus our mission on these unique and essential services. The board has adopted six long-range goals that will carry our agency through the year 2003. And so this is what we're really focused on. Improve library services to state government, increase usage and user satisfaction, increase talking book and braille services to a growing user population, and lead public libraries to achieve excellence in service to children. Those are the first three of our long-range goals. We also have these goals. Take a leadership role in developing a comprehensive statewide library resource sharing network, including improved service to government information. Assist local communities to develop library services for unserved and underserved Oregonians. There's still Oregonians who don't have a public library or who have a substandard public library, and that's one of our board's goals, is to address that problem. And then the sixth goal is really an internal goal for our organization. We want to maximize staff participation in planning and decision-making, support staff development and foster innovation, and continuous quality improvement. This is what our organization looks like, and we're very proud of our organization, Mr. Chair. We're one of the few team-based organizations in state government, and that's why you see these oval shapes instead of a traditional hierarchical type organization. We have four service teams that you see here and one internal services team, and each one of these teams doesn't have a management service employee, and I'll show you later how we've been able to provide a very strong program with very few management staff at the State Library through our team-based organization.
That's something maybe we can share with throughout government?
Absolutely. We like it. It works great for us. Let's look at our budget. And we want to give you several looks, and Dave Fraser is going to go more into this, but I just kind of wanted to give you sort of a first look. As Katie mentioned, we have four program units: administration, library development, talking book and braille services, and library services to our state government customers. And I wanted to point out to you that administration is only 8% of the total budget, and the board is very proud of that fact. Here's a look at our budget by fund. We have a pretty diversified source of funding for the state library. We have federal funds from something called the Library Services and Technology Act, which is a long-standing federal program that provides money to states to improve library services. Our other funds come from something called the State Library Assessment. Since 1993, we have levied an assessment on the state agencies that use the state library and benefit from our services, and I'll tell you more about that later. And then the general fund makes up a portion of our budget. The governor's recommended budget is a 5% increase to the current biennial budget.
Shepke, is that a 5% increase in the general fund or in everything or what?
That's overall.
Overall.
We could find the general fund increase. I know Dave maybe could have that information for you.
Yeah, I noticed the general fund increase is very small, but
right, it's mostly in the other funds.
Other funds, your service fee, your agency service fee has a much more substantial increase for the use within the state agencies than the general fund does.
Right,
almost negligible.
here's a look at our budget by activity, and what I really wanted you to see here, Mr. Chair, was that 38% of our budget consists of grants to local libraries. So that money passes right through and out to local communities to improve their libraries, and that's a big part of what we do. If you zoom in on the governor's recommended budget, you can see that the operations portion is divided up this way with administration, library development, talking book and braille services, and the biggest portion is our service to state government agencies. If you zoom in on the governor's recommended budget, on the grants portion, you can see that we have four major grant programs, and I'll show you more about this later. Competitive Library Services and Technology Act grants, something we call Oregon Reference Link that I'll tell you about later, Oregon Link Net Lender Reimbursement, is another grant program, and Ready to Read grants. These three grants are funded from federal Library Services and Technology Act dollars that come to the state library. This Ready to Read grant is a general funded grant program. And that is the end of my overview.
Oh, all right. And Mr. Fager. Thank you, Mr. Chepke.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. My name is Dave Fager. I'm the budget analyst for the State Library from DAS, Budget Management Division. I have just a few comments to help put in perspective the governor's recommended budget for the State Library. You have a substantial amount of numbers in spreadsheets ahead of you or in front of you that you can look at the actual increases and the percentage increases. I actually don't have my calculator, so in spite of what Jim said, I just couldn't pull out a percentage of general fund increase. So I'm looking at LFO. Maybe they might be able to pull that one out. But the numbers are certainly there. The important issue to keep in mind is that this is a current service level budget period. There is a policy package, two policy packages that were approved on the other side. We'll get to those in a moment. But essentially, that funding is within the current funding that they have plus inflation. We did not approve a policy package that approved any more dollars than they otherwise had in their budget. The policy issue has to do with them wanting to shift an FTE from one budget unit to another. We believe that to be a policy issue that is rightly approved by the legislature. On the front page of the State Library 1999-2001 Governor's Recommended Budget, this is just a brief overview that I'll run through very quickly and be happy to answer any questions. About halfway down the sheet, I do point out that the Governor's Recommended Budget is a 5% increase over the 97-99 legislatively approved budget. Half of that increase is due to increased personal services due to statewide salary increases. The remaining increase is just inflation, which is included as part of the current service level calculation. I proceed from there to start with the legislatively adopted budget numbers. I do add emergency board actions that transpired this biennium, which were the statewide salary increase dollars. Those dollars covered about two-thirds of the actual salary requirements that the agency was needed to actually pay out. And so you'll probably see in some of these statistics some savings that the State Library is trying to achieve in order to cover those salaries until they're actual salaries until we have rolled them up in current service level for next biennium's budget.
Sure. Does that mean somehow or other that the salaries were internally funded, at least a third of the salary increase was internally funded?
Yes, and Mr. Chair, Senator Crowe, that's correct.
Cut programs or find the money someplace in this tight budget.
That is correct. Moving on to the base budget adjustments, those strictly are rolling up and biennializing the salary requirements for the existing staff. And then there are two essential packages considered in current service level buildup, taking into account in the 010 package actual vacancy experience and some small changes in mass transit taxes, and in the 030 package, which is inflation, for general inflation and also state government service charge adjustments.
For the record, Senator Crowe, the question we'd ask with regard to the general fund portion is $54,963, which is 2% in general fund per the governor's recommended budget for 9101.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Proceeding on to the policy packages, the first policy package, 102, Talking Book and Braille Services Staff, is connected to policy package 103, Improving Services to State Government. The governor's recommended budget does not approve any additional general fund over and above that which the agency would otherwise have had in current service level. Understanding that, the State Library had a very high priority on staffing in the Talking Book and Braille Services. They made budget adjustments in Package 103 created financing for that position, which we then removed from a current service level calculation, but included in 102 as $45,030 of general fund. The 0.75 FTE position that is approved or recommended for approval in Package 102 really is being shifted from Package 103 in another portion of the State Library budget. I would point out that the State Librarian did a fantastic job of self-financing that effort and trying to place resources where they could best be utilized in the State Library.
Sure. Senator Crowe is recognized.
Is the position transferred, or is there also a live body transfer? Is there a person in the position who's transferred? And will that work?
I'll defer to the State Librarian.
Mr. Chair, Senator Crowe, what's happening at the State Library, if you've been watching, is that we're undergoing a renovation. And as an efficiency move, we're eliminating one of our two loading docks. And we're going to consolidate all the mail operations into the loading dock that's in Talking Book and Braille Services. So this 0.75 position works at the loading dock that's going away, and we need to move that position over to Talking Books where the one loading dock is going to be. This accomplishes two objectives. It makes the mailing operations more efficient, but it also will give some additional help to Talking Book and Braille Services that's really very much needed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Crowe, I always seem to have difficulty talking about partial people. So it's always best to have the person in charge address that. So that covers packages 102 and 103, and package 105 is a package that was designed to provide additional expenditure limitation for the State Library for them to utilize existing funding to purchase systems furniture and have that installed along with the building renovation, which takes into account some of the engineering requirements for systems furniture versus what they had before. And with that, I'd be happy to open up to any questions.
Are there questions for Mr. Rizzi? Senator Lem is recognized.
Thank you. Do you have any right to pay problem at all? All of asking for a lot of money for right to pay, but maybe you don't.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lim, I will say that the State Library does not have a Y2K problem identified to DAS IR&D. They have done also an excellent job of rotating out their computer equipment, in other words, doing incremental buying on an annual basis. I do know that they probably still have some requirements, and I'll defer to the State Librarian to answer any other.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lim, we have no Y2K problem. One of the reasons we don't is that we have never written our own software. We've always purchased software from commercial software providers, and therefore we don't have to recode software that we wrote years ago, and all our vendors have certified that our software is Y2K compliant.
Thank you.
Are there other questions, Mr. Fager? I have a couple of questions relative to the packages themselves and some of the services which are provided. On the package 102, the Talking Book and Braille Services staff, tell me about that position. Where does the .75, is that split with another position in somewhere else in the building, or is it just an employee that works 3/4 time?
Mr. Chair, that is a full-time position that we propose would be split in terms of its funding, because there's going to be one person working in our mailroom, and 3/4 of their time will be devoted to the Talking Book and Braille Services mail activity, which is the most intensive mail activity at the State Library, and a quarter time will be devoted to the other mail for the rest of the library. So it seemed appropriate to us to split the funding and have it be apportioned in that way.
The next question, thank you very much for that response, Ms. Schipke. The next question I had was dealing with the move to CD-ROM technology and how we're responding to that in relationship to what's happening in the state library system.
Mr. Chair, would that be in relation to Talking Book and Braille services? Or?
Well, in addition to the Talking Book and Braille, that which is presently in bound volumes being accessible via the Internet, if you will, being brought up on a screen and read from a screen or read from a printout or made from an existing CD-ROM.
Mr. Chair, I have some extensive presentation about that, if I could.
Do you have that with you?
Yes.
I'd be delighted.
The next part of my presentation, I would like to cover that at that time.
Well, that'd be wonderful. Could okay. We do that are there any other questions before we move into that portion of the presentation? Could we please
share? Just a question about system furniture. How is systems furniture different from other kinds of furniture?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, we currently have furniture that may be original to our 1939 building. We have those green slate desks that I think were made by the Department of Corrections. And in our new design, in our renovated state library, in order to get the maximum number of staff into the minimum amount of space, we had to go to systems furniture to be most efficient in our use of space. We pay rent for the Department of Administrative Services, but we have an interest in squeezing it into as few square feet as possible.
And that means you create little rooms with barriers and things?
Well, we did away in our renovation with the offices, many of the offices that we had. So we opened out the library, and in order to have a very efficient use of space, we need to use system furniture, and that enables us to get the maximum number of people into the smallest space. If you read Gilbert, you know what I'm talking about.
I don't read Gilbert.
Refer to them on the third floor, D.O.P.M.
Mr. Chair, I might add that from DAS's perspective, that this really allows the high-performance work team and matrix management concept to work much more effectively. They've done an outstanding job of engineering this transition along with the renovation of the building itself.
Wonderful. I've got Gilbert cartoon here.
Thank you, Mr.
Fager.
Mr. Chair, if I may continue, I'll now go to a little more in-depth look at the State Library program. I'm going to follow the program unit, so we'll start with administration. And I wanted to show you a little bit more about our organization. We're very proud of the fact that we've been successfully able to downsize our organization. In fact, the state library, as it shows here, have the largest percentage reduction of any state agency with more than 20 employees back in the early 1990s. Some of you remember that time. And we've gone from 72 positions in 1981 to the current number of positions of 45. The way we've done this is to move from a hierarchical organization, and this is the way we looked in 1993. The board decided that we really needed to go to a team-based organization. So we moved from this pretty traditional-looking organization with silos to a team-based organization, which looks like this. And this is the chart for the current biennium. And each one of these teams is a self-directed team. There's no management service employees in these teams. We pay a differential to one employee to be the team coordinator in each one of these programs. So it's worked very effectively. We believe that this type of organization not only costs less, but it's more effective because we have the staff that's closest to the customers making decisions about serving our customers. So it's worked out very well for us. This has enabled us to streamline our organization. When I became state librarian in 1991, we had 11 managers. There was one manager for every four employees of the state library. Today, we have five managers, a business manager, a personnel manager, and two program managers. And so we've been able to operate our organization with a very small group of managers. We also make more use of volunteers than any other state agency that we're aware of. We have one volunteer for every five FTE staff at the state library. Through the first 20 months of this biennium, we've had 27,648 volunteer hours, saving the state of Oregon about $339,000 if we had to have paid staff do what our volunteers do. That number of hours is equivalent to about 8 FTE compared to 45 positions. That shows you how that ratio works. We have all kinds of volunteers at the state library. We have students. We have job program people. We have disabled people that are getting work experience. We do have community service workers, so we try to take advantage of all the different types of volunteers, and we have a great volunteer coordinator, one of the best in the state.
Mr. Shepke, how many volunteers do you have total?
We calculate that in FTE centers, so it's equivalent to 7 FTE. But on any given day at the library, you'd probably find anywhere from 15 to 30 volunteers, and most all of those are in talking book and braille services. That's where we have a great deal of our volunteers.
I'm interested in your volunteer coordinator. Can you just elaborate on that for us briefly, please, Mr. Shipke?
Mr. Chair, we employ a 0.6 FTE volunteer coordinator. Her job is to recruit volunteers, and she maintains a very extensive network in the Salem area to recruit volunteers. She trains the volunteers when they come to the library. She places the volunteers in the team. Once she places the volunteers, then it's up to the team to supervise the work. But she's the one that's sort of the personnel officer for the volunteers. If there's problems with volunteers, we have to terminate volunteers. She handles that job as well. So
the volunteers thus trained and incorporated into the society feels much like a member of the team then.
Absolutely. And we've actually had volunteers that we've hired for our staff that have gotten the experience and that we've been able to hire. So it's been a very successful program. Like I said, we don't know of any other state agency that uses even close to as many volunteers as the state library does.
The reason that I ask, and I ask selfishly, in the state budget for Parks and Recreation, we went ahead and because a couple of the members of that particular subcommittee have been responsible for scout troops or large scouting organizations, we were unable to always find an opportunity of how we could get information as to how we could best volunteer and utilize manpower in the state parks or other areas of that nature. And that may be something we would want to share, the successes that you had,
mm-hmm.
maybe something we would want to share with other agencies.
Absolutely.
Where we have folks that do like to volunteer, such as our parks, and just maybe have our fiscal officer make sure that is taken back to the fiscal officer that is responsible, because it sounds like that's a very effective volunteering program.
It's tremendous.
I know Fish and Wildlife does a lot with volunteers.
And that's the same concept, Senator Crowe, because, again, it's a park type of a park-related and outdoor-related, and they can use a great deal of volunteers, but it's the issue of how do you coordinate the manpower, and I think that the success probably lies in exactly what Mr. Shepke has told us today, and that is you make them feel part of the team. Once they have some buy-in and some degree of identity with the team, then they won't let the team members down.
Mr. Chair, we find that it's very important to have a volunteer coordinator. And I think some agencies have tried to have a volunteer coordinator without any staff that's coordinating that. And you really have to be willing to make that investment as a staff person to make that successful. It has to be a major part of somebody's job to make it successful.
I think in the parks and fish and wildlife, we're actually going to have an 800 number because of the spread out statewide. But here, you wouldn't. It's fulfilled by the three-quarter time position.
Now, I just wanted to reiterate that the change that's being proposed to our organization in the governor's recommended budget is to move three-quarters of a state library specialist one, here's the other quarter down here, and there's three-quarters of it, one person that will be split up to here. And then this job, administrative specialist two, there's a reclassification that's needed of that position because that person is right now a librarian one, and one thing we're working with the Department of Administrative Services on is consolidating the librarian position series from four classifications into one, which will work much better for us and be more efficient. So we need to reclassify the librarian one because that position is going away, and I think that costs about $5,000 to do that in the next biennium. And those are really the only changes that are proposed in our organization. No new positions, Mr. Chair. Now, if we can be successful in our administration program unit, the board wants to achieve these objectives in 1999-01. This is our long-range goal, which I showed you earlier. What we want to do in particular in 1999-01 is to continue to support staff development and training. This is a big emphasis because, Mr. Chair, you alluded to the fact that we're really transitioning from a print library to an electronic library, and that poses some real training issues for us to get our staff up to speed with the new electronic technology. And then we want to continue to develop a high-performance team-based organization, address outstanding alignment issues. We're still transitioning from the old style of doing business to the new. We're not quite there yet. And we want to assess our progress using the Oregon Quality Initiative criteria. We've already done that once. You may be familiar with the Oregon Quality Award. That's the way that the private sector these days is assessing their quality, and we've used that, and we want to use it again. If we can be successful, these are our performance measures. We actually, as I'll show you later, hope to decrease our over-reliance on volunteers. As much as we're proud of that, I'm going to show you in a minute the way that we really feel, the board feels, that we need to scale back just a little bit in our volunteers. So you can see the number right there actually goes down a little bit. And we do have a goal for affirmative action. We're particularly interested in hiring disabled Oregonians because our talking book and braille services is a service to disabled persons, and we find that we can be much more effective if we can actually hire people with visual impairments to work in talking books, because they know that clientele better than a sighted person. Mr. Chair, I'm going to move on to our second program unit, which is our Information Service to State Government. And this is our product line that we've developed for our service to state government. We've kind of gotten into marketing our service to state government. It's something that not every library does, but we think that in order to get the maximum number of state employees to use the state library, we have to be a little bit aggressive in promoting ourselves. So this is our product line. We do have an assessment on state agencies that pays for these services, and it came in 1993 with some legislation that actually was developed in an interim committee in 1992 that Senator Trowe chaired in the interim, and he helped us with Senate Bill 20 that put this into place, this assessment on state agencies. Prior to that time, we were very dependent on the general fund. We were basically a general fund, federal fund agency, and this assessment has really reduced our reliance on the general fund. Let me tell you about these services. The first one we call Call Smart. This is our personalized information service. It's similar to the reference service that you get from your public library or academic library. You can see that business is good. We've had a 36% increase in this service since 1995. We average about 55 transactions a day with our state government customers, people calling up the state library for information or faxing us or coming in to the state library, so business is good. We just completed a survey of our customers, and 72% rated our service as very good or excellent. So we're very proud of that, and we're always striving to improve our customer service. Now, not everybody said we were great, so we still have a challenge. We're not pleasing everyone, but we're very proud that 72% thought we were doing a good job. This is our electronic library of the future. We call it Work Smart, and it's here today. Any state employee that can access the internet can access WorkSmart. It's a website, and it has a fantastic amount of information. You can see over here, you can read the button, dictionaries, encyclopedias, quick reference, magazines, newspapers, library catalogs, information about state government. This is a huge electronic information resource that state employees, the legislature, the governor, and his staff can all access from their desktop if they can access the World Wide Web. More and more state employees are getting internet access, and I think in just a few years we're going to see that.
Sorry, I'm trying to read that internet address. It's everything but the second three letters.
www.
Oh,
yeah.
So you can call that up. We actually did a blitz of the Capitol, and your staff should all know about it, because we went around to every office and signed them up for Work Smart.
Oh.
We're very proud of this. It has the complete text of the Oregonian back to 1995.
Oh.
So if you're like me and you read something in the Oregonian 8 months ago and you don't know, you want to get back to that, you get on this and you type in the subject, and it takes you to that full text. It has the Encyclopedia Britannica. It has thousands or hundreds of magazines, full text. So this is the way everything's going. This is the library service of the future. We're very proud of it. We have another electronic service we call TrackSmart. This is a little more specialized than WorkSmart, but this is a service that tracks federal laws and federal regulations. So if you're, let's say, a DHR employee and you're interested in something to do with child welfare, we set up a profile based on your interest, And this system tracks everything that's going on every day in Washington, D.C., and sends you email about, you know, a new bill that's been introduced or a change in the regulations. So it keeps everybody up to speed on what's happening in Washington, D.C. We're working on a tracking system for state government, and we hope by the next session that state employees will be able to track bills using this system, and it'll be a lot easier than the old system that they have right now. Another service to state government, which is really great, you know, not all information is in books or even on databases. Sometimes the best source of information is another person. And so with this service we call ListSmart, we create electronic mailing lists for groups of state employees. This happens to be one called ExecNet, and this connects John Yunker to all the agency heads in state government. So he can send out one email, and it goes to all the agency heads. We set up lists for about 55 different uses within state government. I think we've got a list that connects the state superintendent of public instruction to the school district administrators. So it's just an electronic list that connects people so that they can communicate and share information. Now we've mentioned our two policy packages to improve our service to state government, moving the 0.75 position to talking book and braille services. And in the governor's budget, we are applying the other fund savings to the library services and supplies budget. We intend to use $30,000 to purchase more electronic information for WorkSmart, because more information is coming out all the time, and we want to have that as part of WorkSmart. And we're also spending some of it to increase our staff training, which I've talked about. And then there's the package about Christmas furniture. In our library service to state government, the board has set these objectives for the next biennium: to increase and refine our marketing activities and to further develop WorkSmart and other electronic information resources. And our performance measures are to increase the number of information transactions to state employees, to continue to improve the satisfaction rating. This is on a scale of 1 to 5. These are the surveys that we've done, and we want to keep improving that. We want to increase the number of registered WorkSmart users. We're expecting to be at about 4,200 by the end of this biennium, and we want to keep building on that. And we're actually projecting a decrease in the number of state document items distributed to libraries. That's another thing I haven't mentioned that we do. Anything that's published by the state government, we send out copies to libraries. But we project that number is declining because more and more publications are going up on the Internet as opposed to being printed. And we're already starting to see that. So we're tracking that as one of our performance measures. So that actually saves money when there's fewer printed publications to send out. I'm going to move now to Talking Book and Braille Services. We're very, very proud of this service. We're the only library for the blind in the state of Oregon. This is a unique service. And we mail out an average of 1,459 books per day. And that means that about that many come back every day as well. And so we do a huge volume of business in Talking Book and Braille Services. Most of these are recorded books that are recorded on special cassettes that play on special machines that we also provide to the users of this service. This is a mail order service that goes out to anybody that's qualified and has been certified by a doctor or even a librarian can certify somebody that they have need of Talking Book and Braille services. So most of the items are recorded, but some are Braille as well. We have both Braille users and recorded book users. We also survey our customers regularly for this service, and 93% of our customers rated talking with the Braille Services was very good or excellent in our latest survey, and we're very, very proud of that. We do an amazing volume of business with just 10 FTE and about 7 FTE volunteers. And I also need to mention that the state gets a real bargain with this service because the Library of Congress provides all the books. We get all the books from the Library of Congress, so we don't have to buy books unless we want to buy some books that the Library of Congress doesn't produce. But they send us the cassettes for free. The U.S. Postal Service also gives us free mailing privileges. So every book that we send out, there's no charge to the state. So it's a real partnership between the state and the federal government to provide this service.
How about when it's mailed back?
It's free. There's a little card that they flip over, and it sends it back with our name on it, and then it sends it back free.
Huh.
Now, we benchmark this service because there's a talking book library in every state. Most of them are at state libraries. And we benchmark this service because we want to know how we're doing. And we picked out 7 states to compare to that are similar to Oregon in terms of their demographics and population. And we're very proud that we circulate more books per patron than any of these 7 states. We have the highest circulation per staff FTE, so we're the most productive library of any of these states. And we have one of the lowest costs per circulation at $1.78 a circulation. And I point out to you that Washington State's cost per circulation is about double that of Oregon. So that shows what an efficient operation that we run in state libraries. We do use a lot of volunteers. And as I say, we're very, very proud of our volunteer program, but the board really feels that we've been over-reliant on volunteers and that we need to get back to a better balance between staff and volunteers. And this shows you that if you compare Talking Book and Braille Services to other major public libraries in the state of Oregon, that we use more volunteers by far as a percentage of our total workforce. 44% of our total workforce is volunteer. And as I say, we're proud of that. But on the other hand, as you can see, it's pretty far out of line with what other libraries are doing. About 10 years ago, we were at about 30%, which still would be the best. But this shows you that we really pushed it way out there. This shows you another look at kind of the same thing. And I wanted you to see this graph in connection to policy factor number 102 that we talked about that transfers that 0.75 FTE to talking books. And I want to emphasize what Dave said, and that is this is not a new position. And this is not new money. This is money from within our current service level budget that we found to fund this move. Now, this chart shows you two things. It shows you our paid staff and our volunteer staff going all the way back to 1989-90. And then overlaid on that is what's happening to our business, what's happening to our what we call circulation, which is the number of checkouts. And as you can see, it kind of flattened out in the early 90s. But since 1995, we've been on an upward trend. And this is a projection of where we think we'll be in the next biennium. We see no reason that this line is going to level out. It's headed straight up. And yet, as you can see, with the governor's recommended budget, we're just getting back to the amount of staff that actually is just slightly less, I think, than we had 10 years ago when our circulation was down here. So I think this shows you that we really need to move this 0.75 position to talking books to help us maintain this growing service, also to let us maybe begin to reduce our reliance on volunteers. We'd really like to get back to this where it's about one-third volunteer, two-thirds paid staff. The problem with volunteers is they're wonderful, but on any given day, you can never be sure if you'll have enough. So, and there's nothing worse, you know, to have 1,400 talking books show up on your doorstep and, you know, two or three of the volunteers didn't show up that day. There's just really no way to deal with it. So that's what we're trying to accomplish with this decision package. I also want to point out that because we've had other savings in talking books, other cost reductions in talking books, that the governor's recommended budget, even with this position moving to talking books, is only a 1.6% increase to the current budget for TBAC. So it's a very modest increase. This additional cost has been offset in some other areas. So all we're asking for is a 1.6 increase to talking books. That's, you know, that's below the 2.8% inflation allowance that we were allowed in putting together our budget. If we can get our staffing situation squared away in TBAB, what the board would really like to do is reach out to more Oregonians who we think need this service. This shows you what the Library of Congress estimates are the number of Oregonians who could benefit from this service, who have visual handicaps, who have dyslexia and other problems that prevent them from reading conventional printed books. Now, not all those people are going to be readers, and we know that 47% of Oregonians over age 65, because most of these people are elderly people, use libraries. So we figure that 47% of this number would be 21,935. We currently only serve about 10,000. But we think there's the potential to serve maybe twice as many Oregonians as we are today. We've kept TBAB something of a secret, because we've had such a hard time in the past 10 years just dealing with the business that we have. What we'd really like to do is to advertise this service so that more people know about it. We think there's people all over the state that never heard of talking books. But until we get our staff stabilized, we really are reluctant to do that. So if we can
been able to talk to the senior services groups, the governor, senior service council, or whatever they call that group, know about these services, and do they alert the seniors who might
be? Well, like I said, Senator, we are very reluctant at this time to market this service, because we know that if it were to increase today, we don't know how we could handle the increased business. So the board says, first, you know, we've got to add some more staff, and, you know, we're making a start on that with this 0.75.
I understand that, but I think you're right about the need and the fact that there are a lot of people who benefit from it.
So if we can have your support for the TBAP budget, we would increase marketing activity in the next biennium. The board would like to do that. We'd maximize our fund development opportunities, and I'm going to tell you about that in a minute. And we'd like to develop a new comprehensive plan for TBAS, because we're operating on a 10-year plan that we are on a 5-year plan that we did about 5 years ago. So it's time to revise our long-range plan. If we can do that, we will increase our number of people served. These are the direct. These are the people that are registered directly for the service. We actually, as that last slide showed, some of the people are in nursing homes and there's deposit collections, and we estimate there's about 3,000 of those people. We can improve satisfaction, and this is our donation program that I want to tell you about. We began in 1996 to solicit private support for TBAB, and it's primarily the TBAB patrons that we turn to support the program, and we've had good success, as you can see here. We raised almost $75,000 in the 95-97 biennium. This is our target for this biennium, and we might actually exceed that target. And this would be our target for the next biennium. We're doing mail solicitation. We're beginning to get some bequests, and that's really what we're hoping to see in the future, that we might get some very substantial bequests. We had some consultants tell us that Talking Books has great potential for fundraising because it serves an elderly population and it means so much to the people that get the service. And we have had success with this. Now, what we told our donors was that we would use their money to enhance the service and to create an endowment fund for the long term. And we have enhanced the program. We've spent something like about $20,000 to get books and other materials that we couldn't get through the Library of Congress to enhance the collection. And we built the endowment. And as of today, we have about $285,000 in the PBAS donation fund, and about $206,000 have been designated as the endowment for PBAS. So we're very pleased about that. And we think in the future, if we could get some large bequests and really build up the endowment fund, and we could be less reliant with this program on the general fund. We're not there yet, but we're making a strong start at that. Let me turn now to our library services, our library development services. This is the last program area that I'm going to talk about. And this is really what the State Library was founded to do in 1905. We're going to celebrate our centennial not too many years from now. And when the State Library was established in 1905, our job was to develop library services for local communities in the state of Oregon, and we were very successful at that. In 1905, there were 3 public libraries in the state. Now we have 130. We have school libraries in every school, and that was our job. And we're still at it, but we're targeting our efforts. And the focus that the board has right now is on children, improving service to children. And the reason the board is focused on this, I wanted to show you something that you may have read about in the paper just in the last few weeks, but we do know that we have a long way to go to have our children be proficient readers in the state of Oregon. And you probably heard about the National Assessment of Educational Progress, which shows that only about a third of our fourth graders are proficient readers at the present time, and that when you get down into the minority populations, the situation is even much worse. So this is something that the board, this isn't new. I mean, we've seen these tests in the past, and the board, State Library Board, has been very concerned about this. How do you improve reading proficiency? Well, there's not any single panacea, but research for many, many years has shown that the single most important activity for building the knowledge required for eventual success in reading is reading aloud to children. And all of you know this. You probably read to your children. And this suggests a very important role for the public library to make sure that every child has books, that every home has books. And the focus that public libraries have is on preschool children, before they get to school, making sure that every child has access to books. And so this has been the focus of the State Library Board, and we've been working on it, but we have a ways to go. We just did a survey in the Oregon Population Survey. We commissioned a question asking a random sample of Oregonians, have you used the public library, and have members of your family used the public library in the past year? And we're very proud of the fact that 87% of the school-age children, it turns out, use their public library. But here's what sort of alarmed us, that only 36% of the preschool children were reported by their parents taking the survey having used the public library. So there's a lot of outreach to be done to preschoolers. And we've known this for a number of years. And so back in 1993 or 1992, again, when Senator Trow was chairing our interim committee, we came to him and talked to him about this, and the committee designed a program called the Ready to Read Grant Program. And beginning in 1993, the state library began making grants to local libraries for them to use to improve their service to children, to reach out to the children that aren't using their public library. And so today, in this past round of grants, we make 116 grants to libraries all over the state. It's not a competitive grant program. It's the allocation of money is by formula. It's mostly population-based. And it's been very, very successful. It's currently funded at 75 cents per year per child. It is a general fund program. You can see the total for the current biennium. In the governor's recommended budget, the amount is the same. It was an increase in the governor's recommended budget. It's that same amount. I wanted to show you some of the grant projects that we've had in the state. These just happen, I noticed, to be in some of your districts. I don't know how that happened.
That never happens in this community.
But what you see here, even taking some out of your district, is that the emphasis here is on outreach. It's reaching out to kids that aren't coming to the library. It's going to the Head Start centers. It's going to the family child care providers. It's doing everything we can to get books in the hands of every child, not waiting for them to come to the library. And it's been very successful. The largest grant we make is just over $90,000 for the Multnomah County Library. The smallest grant we make is $30 for the Helix Public Library, but they used it well. The average grant is about $4,500. So it's not a large program, but it's really made a difference, and we can prove that.
Yes, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Where is Sheila?
That's in Umatilla County.
Yeah.
North of Pendleton. Yes, sir.
Hmm. Never heard of it before.
Been to that library, Mr. Shepard?
Absolutely. I've been to everyone. I haven't been to Agnes.
Oh, you haven't been there.
I think it's marvelous that such small areas have libraries.
Absolutely.
That's outstanding.
Right. Now, we measure our success with this program, and we created a performance measure, and it's the sum of the program attendance, the number of kids that are both coming to programs in the library and outside of the library, which really is more important to us with this program, plus the number of books checked out to children in the state of Oregon. And our statistics show us that since this program began in 1993, our benchmark is 92, we've seen a 49% increase in service to children. Now, we don't take all the credit for that. At 75 cents per child, we're not having that entire impact. But I'll tell you, we'll take credit for some of that. And we're very, very proud of that. This is really just phenomenal. Now, in addition to focusing on children, another real focus for our development activity in building libraries in local communities is to get libraries to share their resources, sort of level the playing field for information in the state of Oregon, so that a student at a high school in Helix has the same access to information as a student at the University of Oregon. And again, when Senator Trow was helping us in 1992 with an interim committee on libraries, we designed these two programs using our federal Library Services and Technology Act money to equalize access to information in the state. This program is called Interlibrary Loan Net Lender Reimbursement, and that's a fancy way of saying that we now have a situation in the state where any library that lends more books to another library than they borrow for their users gets reimbursed just for that imbalance. So if it turns out that in a given year the University of Oregon lends out 10,000 more books to other Oregon libraries than they borrow for their own students. We pay them just the difference. And we use federal money to do that. Most of the reimbursements are $1 per loan. And our budget for this in the governor's recommended budget is about $700,000. Now what this does is it ensures that every library freely loans any of their books to any other library. And if we weren't doing this, there would be libraries that would charge a fee. But I'm proud to say that there's not a single library in the state of Oregon, even the private universities, have agreed to accept this fairly modest reimbursement and make their collections available to anybody in the state. So it opens up access to information. The second thing we did in the legislation that we passed in 1993, we created 5 regional reference referral centers. And they're at Multnomah County Library, Eastern Urban University, the Chief County Library, Jackson County Library, and of course, State University. And we contract with these libraries. We give them federal money, Federal Library Services and Technology Act money. They agree to answer any reference question from any library in their region. So if you walk into Brownsville Public Library in Lynn County, and you might have a fairly sophisticated information need, having to do with your business or something, they can pick up the phone, call Oregon State University, and get you that information. So again, we level the playing field so that every library can serve the information needs in its region, and it's been very successful. We're budgeting about $500,000 of federal Library Services and Technology Act money for this in the next biennium. The last thing that we do with our Library Services and Technology Act money, and again, this is all federal money, is we have a competitive grant program. And this has been very successful. In the current fiscal year, we made 10 grants. As you can see, we have those grants. These are all the grants that we funded in this particular year. It's a competitive program. We have a statewide advisory group that advises the State Library Board on how to award these grants. And this has been very successful in trying out some new ideas, moving services forward. If you kind of look at some of the titles of these grants, you'll see a big emphasis on technology. The Orion project in Eastern Oregon is going to tie together the library and computer systems in Ontario, LeGrand, and Pendleton so that anybody in those counties can go to a computer and search the catalogs of any of the libraries. We're also, Mr. Chair, extending the statewide ground courier delivery system from LeGrand to Ontario in that grant so that the libraries in your district will have better, they'll be able to get materials faster from the rest of the state. You see an emphasis here on outreach to Spanish-speaking Oregonians is something that the public libraries really, really want to do. So Multnomah County has an outreach program, Hermiston, and Tualatin have an outreach program. So this has been very successful. This Jackson County Southern Oregon Library Information System will create one computer library catalog for 3 counties in Southern Oregon. It will be very cost-effective, and all the citizens will have access to any of the books in those 3 counties. So we have a really phenomenal grant program. Mr. Chair, if we can have your support for Library Development Services in the next biennium. These are the objectives that the board has set in this budget. To lead public libraries to improve service to children, we want to build more partnerships. We have been partnering with the Department of Ed and with other programs to try to work in tandem. We've got a great program going with the Commission on Children and Families called Reading for a Healthy Start to incorporate reading instruction into the Healthy Start program. We want to develop a best practices program to really share the best of what's going on to serve kids in the state. In terms of our continued development of statewide resource sharing, we want to improve access to information, continue to do that, and improve access to state government information as well. Our other objectives for library development, we want to pursue, in terms of addressing this need of people that still don't have library service or have very substandard library service, the board wants to pursue what we call an aggressive regionalization strategy. We now have a group of librarians in Eastern Oregon that actually are interested in forming a 10-county library district, which would be a public library serving all 10 counties of Eastern Oregon. I think that would be more efficient, and that would be really the only way to improve services in Eastern Oregon, and they're working very hard on that, and the State Library Board wants to support that effort. We want to continue to improve the percentage of Oregonians receiving at least minimal public library service. This is an Oregon benchmark, by the way, and in the latest report of the Progress Board, we received an A- for our efforts in this area, and we thought that was pretty good because most of the grades you might have seen were C's and B's, so we were proud of our A-. We want to increase service to children, and we are working on this Orion project, which we hope someday will be a statewide interlibrary loan system, and we want to increase the number of Oregonians that are taking advantage of that.
Sure. How is that different from the link program that you talked about?
The one thing that you can't do yet is you can't get on a computer and say, I'm looking for a certain book, and I want to search the whole state of Oregon and see if it's in any of the libraries here. We haven't developed that technology. You can search individual catalogs. You can search some groups of libraries, like the Orbis Project, I know you're familiar with, is a group of higher ed libraries that have gotten together. But the technology is coming that will enable us to search all 130 public libraries, all 60 academic libraries simultaneously. And, you know, if it's in our Oregon library, you can find it. And that's what we're trying to do with this Orion project. It's still sort of developmental, but we're getting there. And Oregon State University is helping us with this because they have a lot of the technical expertise. Mr. Chair, I'm almost done with my presentation, but I did want to close by sharing something with you. You've seen a lot of numbers, and we do measure our success using performance measures, but the board also measures our success by what our customers say about us. And every week, we get at least two or three unsolicited thank yous from our customers, and I just wanted to share some of those with you. We actually got one from the legislature. Craig, did anyone tell you you're terrific? That just came through not too long ago. Department of Revenue employees said we saved 20 hours of work because of some information we provided to that agency. And that makes our day, and that's exactly what we're there to do. Your staff has always been prompt. Here's a talking book patron who's son is dyslexic. Thank you for giving my son the opportunity to utilize this wonderful service. I believe listening to these stories has helped him improve his reading ability significantly. And here's another talking book patron. Having talking books has been a great help in warding off the negative consequences of not being able to read. Most of our talking book patrons are people in their 70s, 80s, 90s who have lost their vision. They've been readers all their life. And that's a real desperate feeling when you're a reader and you're suddenly cut off from books. And so we get letters like that. And Mr. Chair, I'm going to end by giving you my favorite letter of the last 6 months. I had to share this with you. It says, Dear folks, my mother is no longer able to use this talking book service. While she could, she really enjoyed it, getting to relive all the old stories she had read many years ago. At 95 years of age, there wasn't too many new stories she cared for, but she would listen to the old favorites over and over again. We, her family, wish to thank you for many hours of enjoyment you brought to her. Keep up the good work. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, with your help, we'll keep up the good work. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that.
excellent report, Mr. Shefke. Are there additional questions for Mr. Shefke at this time? I missed a portion of the presentation. I apologize. I need to do a legislative fiscal office, and there was one portion that I just wanted to make sure, the ready-to-read portion. Can I just ask what in this particular budget are we enhancing the ready-to-read overall program? Does it stay the same? Is it enhanced? Tell me what happens there, please.
Yes, Chair, the ready-to-read program is funded at 75 cents per child per year, and the governor's recommended budget leaves it at that level. In fact, the dollar amount is the same as it was in the current biennium, so there's no enhancement to that program in the government.
But even an inflationary growth.
Which package is it from, Katie?
Jim, help me here, but I think that package 102 isn't the inflation being used, the ready-to-read inflation, the state government service charges is being used to fund that particular package. So there is somewhat of a decrease in ready-to-read from that aspect because that money is being shifted, basically.
Mr. Chair, the board's priority in this budget was to get help for TBAS. And in our negotiations on the governor's recommended budget, we were willing to sacrifice a 2.8% increase, but it was just a standard inflation increase, in order to help finance the 0.75 position for TBAS. So it's just part of a trade-off.
The trade-off. So keeps it at the...
And it keeps it at the same dollar amount. It's still roughly 75 cents per child per year.
So I've heard from my library back in Eastern Oregon, and they're happy that they would be happy if they could keep this, you know, with the rest of the cuts that we're experiencing in your monthly. And that was one of the questions: will we be able to keep our 75 cents per child per year? And
very good point.
Yes, yeah, and I wanted to make sure that the 75 cents was in fact in place. Okay. Are there other questions? Mr. Shefke at this point.
I just want to say I think they do such a good job.
An excellent job. Absolutely, Senator, and I think so say we all. I wanted to know if at this time we anticipate that there'll probably be rather substantial public testimony tomorrow. Just wanted to know if there is any public testimony that folks would like to come forward with today. We would invite that today as well. And if there is not any public testimony, we're just a couple minutes early. Maybe we could just have Katie Cannon just take us quickly through the overall budget issue. We're not going into a work session. We just wanted to maybe go into the numbers which we have available to us.
First of all, when I look at a particular agency, the first thing I do look at is their mission, and I find that this particular agency is very focused for their mission, and definitely, I mean, that's what they do, is what they say they're doing. So, you know, that was real positive. The next thing I do is I start looking at the spending patterns. I go into the 97-99 for an 18-month report of expenditures, and I take a look at, is there any areas where they are underspending, where there is some room, you know, that we may want to look at the general fund area and remove that particular limitation. This budget was particularly hard because I go in line item by line item and I look at personal services and supplies, and I only found areas, and it was all in the TBABS area. Talking book and barrel service. Can you use TBABS? It's a lot easier. There were three areas that I found. First of all, was in personal services, and there was quite a big hole there of underspending. It was over $100,000. But when I started talking to them, they had, you know, people that had been there for years. Jim talked about them leaving, you know, early retirement. One lady retired in 37 years, okay. So I said that wasn't early retirement. But generally, they are right on target for their personal services and TBABS for the upcoming biennium. I don't see any additional room in there, so they're right on target for that. The other area that I look at, it's in other funds in TBABS, and it's the donation fund that Jim has talked about. they have a carryover. They're expecting a carryover at least of $209,000 this particular biennium, and I think they're about 14% ahead of projections. I mean, in that particular donation, so I think that ticketing balance will be larger. They have are expecting over $333,000 in additional donations, and there's $11,500 in interest. They have only budgeted for expenditures $102,000, so there is some room in there as far as those other funds. And I went back and looked at what they had been at least budgeting, and this is what they're calling the endowment fund. It appears that the board does have some control over how that's being spent, but I don't see where it's a formal endowment at this particular time. And when I looked at their budget, they have budgeted operational expenditures out of that donation fund. I have personal services, in-state travel, out-of-state travel, state government service charges, that sort of thing. Plus, package 102, they have taken part of the inflation rate, the inflation for the state government service charges, and they're using that to actually take that money and use that for the for funding that TBAB position. So they are using some of that money, that donation money, for operational expenses. So that is one area that I did find that they were they had more revenue than they do have expenditures there. The only thing I would caution the committee on in this particular area, the lady that they had who was doing the donations, that particular program, my understanding, she passed away. And so I wouldn't, even though they have budgeted over $300,000 with additional donations, I wouldn't take a look at it and say, well, you know, that's definitely what they're going to get in that area.
Sure. I don't know much about that program, but I do know that these are people who are grateful for having received the Braille and the oral books that they can use, and they make contributions to state library with the idea that it's going into an endowment fund to help that service. And I think if we begin to tap into the endowment fund to fund their daily operations, it'll keep that fund from growing to the point where it can be big enough to provide some revenue. And I think their intention was to use the interest on it, not to use the fund itself or those donations to fund their ongoing operations. Probably ask for the money on that basis. I don't know, but you can ask them.
I did look at some of the information that they were sending out to people, and it does talk about some operational expenses. Well, things that make sense for the TBAP program. I mean, funding parking for volunteers. Paying for temporary help to help distribute the books. I mean, if they don't have some of these things, they can't distribute the books. But they seem to have been, from what the documentation I saw, very open about what they are spending the money. But I think their intent long term is using it for endowment. But they do appear to be using some of it. Now, they budgeted for operational expenses, too, but I don't see the board looking to spend all of this money on an operational expense. I didn't see that.
One of the things we did discuss in the process was the potential that we might be able to particularly with regard to the packaging and shipping of the Braille and the talking books, the potential of maybe using prison labor, and the potential there is so difficult to try and move product around and the potential for contraband and those kinds of things. That it just doesn't lend itself to any of those kinds of things. So and the other thing that was mentioned on this ship here is the potential of the supervision of the making them part of the team, and that it just doesn't lend itself to the community correction type of employment for a backup labor.
I think Mr. Shepke might want to explain the endowment fund.
Yes, Mr. Chair. And I need to correct Katie. Some of the other funds budgeted in TBAS are actually miscellaneous receipts and not donation funds. We do get income at the state library from people making photocopies and things like that. And so it's not all donations is my understanding. And the whole issue of using donations for operations is something that the board has have agonized over. We actually had a complaint, which I think you may hear about tomorrow, because you're going to get some testimony from our fund development committee chair. We have a committee that helps us with fund development. And we got a complaint from a woman whose mother made a donation, and it got back to her that we were using some donations to help with the staffing on days when the volunteers don't come in, and we've got 1,400 books on our doorstep. We have picked up the phone and called St. Vincent de Paul and gotten some help. This complaint caused the board to reconsider that policy, and they actually decided to not do that anymore. So in the future, you know, their wish is that we never use donation funds for staff to help with temporary staff, and indeed, you know, not to use donation funds for operations, because we feel that people's intention in giving us donations is not to fund the operations of Talking Book and Braille services, but to enhance the program and to build the endowment. So we're going to be, the board wants us to be much more careful.
The literature that you send out with regard to the grant application, the grant request, does it allude to the utilization potentially of that portions of the funds that you're receiving grants to be used for operating kinds of expenses?
Mr. Chair, the literature and the information that we give to people is that if they give the Talking Books, we will use their money to enhance the program. We use that term enhancement, or to build an endowment fund. And we actually have a policy that says any undesignated donation that doesn't come in response to a solicitation automatically goes into the endowment fund. And the idea with that endowment, again, it's only a little over $200,000 now, but our fund development plan is that if we can build that endowment, much as the universities do in the state, to be substantial, then at that point we would look at the interest on that endowment as a way to support the operations of the program. And we're, you know, the board is very much wanting to do that in the future. We realize the vulnerability of this program given the situation with the general fund. And we see that as a long-term problem. And this is part of our response to say we think we can support this program on the interest of the endowment. But that's a long-term strategy. That will be years from now. But we do intend to pursue that.
Thank you very much. Are there other questions of Mr. Shepke at this point? We'll come back to public testimony tomorrow, and hopefully we'll go into work session at the same time. If there's nothing further, why don't we just go ahead and gavel the meeting closed? And thank you very much.